My name is Erin Rooney. I'm from the University of Wyoming, and I'm a master's student in soil science. So dryland agriculture, specifically dryland wheat, takes up an expansive area of Wyoming's high plains. Wyoming is a unique place to practice dryland agriculture due to our low precipitation as well as our calcareous soils. So the mean annual precipitation in Wyoming is around 12 inches or 30 centimeters per year, with the majority of that falling in the winter months opposite of the growing season. This constrains yield significantly, to the point that many farmers opt to be de facto organic. What I mean by this is that they don't want to take the risk to invest money in things like inorganic fertilizer or chemical weed control, because they might not see a return on that investment when precipitation is so low their wheat yields may not be high enough to pay that investment back. Now, the semi-arid conditions are also responsible for the calcareous nature of Wyoming soils. The low precipitation allows calcium carbonate to accumulate in the ground, taking up over 15% of the soil. This calcium carbonate precipitates phosphorus out of solution, making it as calcium phosphate, making it largely unavailable to the wheat. Growers are meeting these challenges. They practice wheat fallow to conserve moisture, so that's a season of wheat, followed by a year-long season of fallow, bare fallow, in which nothing is grown, meant to conserve moisture for the next wheat crop. This does have some drawbacks. For example, this leads to soil erosion. It also leads to a lack of organic matter, and it can lead to a lack of competition for weeds. To control weeds, farmers till often. Tillage can also lead to soil erosion. It can lead to a lack of soil organic matter, and it can also lead to a loss of soil structure. Now, another method of soil moisture conservation is the exclusion of cover crops in Wyoming. Cover crops would be incredibly beneficial in this environment. They could increase soil structure, reduce soil erosion, increase soil organic matter and nutrient cycling, and provide competition for weeds. However, we don't get the moisture needed to create the cover crop biomass that we would need to get these benefits while maintaining wheat yield. So farmers exclude them due to many studies and experiences that the following wheat crop after a cover crop cycle will be significantly depleted. Very briefly, I'm going to talk about Utah. So in Snowville, Utah, the conditions are very similar. Calcareous soils, semi-arid conditions, low precipitation, and dryland wheat. In the mid-1990s, researchers at Utah State University applied compost at a high rate of application, 50 megagrams per hectare dry weight. That's 25 tons per acre dry weight as well. They applied this once. To give a little bit of context, a compost company in Colorado will recommend about 5 megagrams per hectare dry weight compost, and they'll recommend that you apply it more than once, maybe annually or maybe once, and then 2 years later. These researchers applied it only once at the beginning of the project. And 16 plus years later, they're still seeing an increase in yields, about twice the yield in those composted plots compared to the no compost plots. This varies with moisture. You may have just a very low moisture year, but you're still seeing about twice that yield. It's just a little bit less. Oh, I switched. That's all right, I meant to switch. So why is this occurring? What USU researchers found was that the soil moisture, let's start on the left side, the soil moisture was lower in the composted plots, but the soil organic carbon was higher. So there was, it's crazy to say, but there was maybe a little bit of excess moisture in that soil that when you had that compost applied, it was utilized and more biomass was produced. With that influx in biomass, came greater extractable phosphorus in the composted plots. So what they think is happening is that as that wheat biomass is decomposing, the phosphorus is staying in an organic form. Instead of being released too quickly to the soil, it's being released more slowly so that plants can use it without that calcium being precipitated as mineral calcium phosphate, when it would be largely unavailable to the wheat. So USU researchers believe or hypothesize that this increase in available phosphorus was a really important factor in the increase of that wheat yield. This brings us to my project, the objective of which is to use these results of this compost study here in Wyoming, in combination with cover crops that could potentially solubilize phosphorus. So what I want to know is if increasing phosphorus availability through the compost as well as cover crops, if they could solubilize some of that precipitated phosphorus, if I could maintain wheat yields while producing enough cover crop biomass to make cover crops possible in Wyoming. This is a preliminary study. It's meant to just look at the phosphorus side of these cover crops, not the moisture. It's not moisture constrained. That will come later when cover crops are recommended to the field. I am using soil from Lingle, Wyoming, if anyone knows it. It is very calcareous, very low in available phosphorus, slightly alkaline. It's a sandy loam. I have 9 cover crop treatments. The first is all 4 cover crops as a mixture. I chose radish, fava bean, buckwheat, and oat due to research that found them to have some interaction with phosphorus cycling. My next 4 treatments are each of them individually. My final treatments are each of them in combination with oat due to research by Maltese Landry 2015 that found oats or a cereal combined with other cover crops to solubilize phosphorus better than cover crops on their own. And then my 9th treatment is a fallow control. Each of these is combined with my 2 fertility treatments, compost, which is the 50 megagrams per hectare dry weight, and no compost. My experimental design, I have a round of cover crops followed by a round of wheat. So I grow the cover crops, measure the biomass, terminate them, chop them up, mix them up in the soil to simulate tillage. Then I plant wheat. After the wheat round, I got that biomass, and that is the data that I'd like to present to you right now. So this is wheat biomass with compost addition. We're not looking at no compost right now. What I found was that the fava bean and the mix of all 4 were the only treatments that, when they preceded the wheat biomass, that wheat biomass was significantly higher from the fallow. The others were not significantly higher. So going forward, potentially, I'm not making that recommendation yet because there's a lot more information I need, but those are the 2 that I'm looking at that could be brought into the field. Also, keep in mind, the oat did not do very well in the greenhouse. I think there was a little bit too much moisture. So that is one that does well in Wyoming fields. I wouldn't count it out right now. Now I want to look at in combination with compost and no compost. So again, the mix and fava bean did significantly higher than the fallow with compost, but not without compost. The fava oat was actually the 2nd most significantly different from the fallow, significantly higher, without compost. This is a really interesting finding. If a farmer is not interested in applying this high rate of compost, which many aren't because it's very expensive, even if it could ultimately pay for itself, I might recommend this fava oat as a way of potentially solubilizing phosphorus or increasing biomass. All right, so bringing up the phosphorus again, I've kind of circled back around to it. There's more analyses that I'm currently conducting. I'm looking at mycorrhizal colonization of the cover crops as well as root nodules. I'm looking at wheat yield. I'm performing a phosphorus fractionation modified by Yuki, Audet, and others to look at phosphorus in the soil and how that is cycling. I'm looking at soil organic matter as well as pH and enzymes. The goal of this is to recommend potential cover crops to the field that could be used. There's a big question once I make this recommendation, which is, are these cover crops going to perform the same in the field as they are in a moisture, not limited environment? Maybe not. Maybe they'll allocate resources differently. That's something that we'll find when we bring them to the field. And it's a good reason not to discount all of them. But it's a good way of getting a starting point so that we can start trying to find a good combination for cover crops in Wyoming. And the importance of this research really lies in its value to the farmers. They're really interested in integrating cover crops right now, especially the younger generations, the sons of a lot of them, are kind of in charge of the cover crop business of the farm. And so this research is something that they're partnering with us on, they're very interested in, and its value to them is really why we're doing this. There's many people I need to thank, the people who've helped me in the lab and in the greenhouse, my funding from the USDA Organic Research and Extension Initiative, and my advisor, Jay Norton, who's currently in Poland. He's not here, but he'll be back. All right, are there any questions? Yeah. Oh. Sorry.
Do you have time for questions?
Mm-hmm. So it had to be organic certified because they are de facto organic, but the ones we're working with are certified organic farmers. So it was 20, I think it was 25 to 1, and it was made of manure, cow manure. I don't think that they put anything else in it. It was a very basic mixture from Humalfa in Colorado. Questions? No. Okay. Thanks. Oh, yeah.
Maybe I missed it, but did you mention what rate you apply the compost in the pots?
In the greenhouse? In the greenhouse?
Yeah.
Okay. And the question is if I at what rate I applied the compost in the greenhouse. It's the same as that initial study, so 50 megagrams per hectare dry weight.
Are there any?
Is there access to the compost for the grain growers in that region if they decide, okay, we want to use it? So one thing is access, and the other thing is the cost of that, because it's not high-value crop, so
yeah.
It's really the cost is a driving factor.
Mm.
So maybe for those kind of systems, covered crops by themselves might be an option. I'm talking that because I had the same issue with the corn in Ontario. The farmers are really resisting of using because there is no access. They have to haul it from the long distance, and also the cost, which is the cost of purchasing, transport, and application.
Yeah. Okay. This is a really good question. It's if there's access to this compost. So that's the other side of it, not just the cost of it. No, there's not very good access. We actually went with a compost company in Colorado initially, who wound up just kind of canceling on us, and that's common. We wound up spreading it by hand on the field, which was not enjoyable and not something that farmers would ever be willing to do. They shouldn't. It's acres, but. In Wyoming, we have been able to find a compost company that is pretty reliable and pretty good as far as the cost, but it's one compost company in Wyoming, and Wyoming's a big place, so no, access is not very good right now. Any other questions? All right, thank you guys.